Access number 30418, Mr. Eric Greg Robey, Real 6. Now, we're talking about anything else happened while you were at Lindholm with 1656 Heavy Bomber Conversion Unit, HBCU. You were converted to a heavy bomber, I presume. So yes, you got your flight.
Well, we were flying Lancasters there.
Now, tell me about what was your opinion of the Lancaster? How did it?
Beautiful.
What people say that, but what's beautiful about it? What's so good about it?
It was roomy. It was quiet. It was fast. You could glide them on two engines. This is what we practiced at Lindholm. It was just, the epitome of heavy bombers.
So much better than the Wellington.
Oh, yes.
And do you know which mark of Lancaster it was? Or?
This has got Lancaster 3 on here.
3, right.
111 sort of.
That'd be it.
I've got some photographs of...
So what type of training exercises were you doing with that?
Well, at Lindholm, it was mainly for the skipper and the flight engineer. They both were pilots. I've got here your flight familiarization flight, 45 minutes, the first one, when we were all together in the Lancaster. Familiarisation 1, that was called, then familiarisation 2, it was a bit longer, 2 hours 15 minutes. Then it's got familiarisation 3, and I've got FCC beside that, and I don't know what it was for. Oh, it might have been firing camera gun, I don't know. FCG. An hour and 45 minutes. Those three flights, the pilot was neither Flight Sergeant Heyman or our flight engineer, Flight Sergeant
Turnbull.
Turnbull. The first flight where Heyman flew it was on the 25th of March. Well, that was only 2 days, 23, 24, 25. We did two flights one day. We did a flight with Squadron Leader Clark, and then we landed and Flight Sergeant Heyman took over. The next day, the pilot was Flying Officer Edy, and we did a dual high-level bombing trip. That was flying over to the ranges, which were big platforms out in the North Sea. We used to head over the coast at Mablethorpe, bombing from various heights, which were the practice bombs. And then Flight Sergeant Heyman circuits and landings. And then we had another of these fighter affiliation things where we're throwing the aircraft all over the sky for the gunners, and that was flown by Flight Officer Edy. But then again, the same day we landed, Flight Sergeant Heyman took over and did some camera gun flying and high-level bombing flying. That high-level bombing's down because he would take instructions from the bomb aimer, left, steady, and all this sort of thing, right, steady, right, all it. Getting used to doing that sort of thing. Then the last flight, that was the last flight, I think, just a minute. Oh, no. Yes, I've got a lot more here, yes, from the page. Yeah, those were the early stages when they're taking over, from the 23rd to the 27th to the 29th. But on the 29th of March, that's when Flight Sergeant Heyman was flying it all the time, more or less on his own. And doing cross countries, much longer trips, camera gun exercises, cross countries.
Now, during this process, were you very aware that the war was coming to an end, or the European war, to be fair? It's not the end.
Yes,
I mean, did you want to get in it, or were you dreading it?
No, we were hoping we'd be there at the finish, you know. It sounds silly, you know, but we wanted to be operational. We'd trained for it. We knew things were getting better. But, you know, D-Day had happened, and they were having problems with Arnhem and all that sort of thing. They were suffering heavy losses, and the beach landings all went haywire and all this sort of things. But coming round, you know, from June round to March the following year, it was obviously come to an end.
So you wanted to be in it?
Yeah, the big thing was the Russians were doing great, you know, advances, you know, towards Berlin. And we were hoping to be there either before them or meet in Berlin, which didn't happen. And we wanted to be there, you know, amongst it. And it only happened to, on a very limited sort of basis. We were considered to be operational.
So when did you finish there? Was that what looks like April?
Yeah. We finished there on, what's the date there? 15th of June 1945. I know the European war had ended then, but that's when we actually finished there.
So how are things developing? Anything more complicated coming?
Fighter affiliation, these were all
just more of the same.
That's Lindholm. Yes, that's Lindholm.
That's what we're talking about, Lindholm, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, yes. This is Binbrook. Yeah.
I think you've got confused there. We finished Lindholm at... Yeah. It's not. It is April, isn't it?
Yes, 13th of April was the last flight we had from there.
So where were you posted then?
The next posting was direct to Binbrook.
Now,
460 Squadron.
460 Squadron.
Yes.
You know which wing?
Yes, I do. I've got it somewhere here.
It's all right, we can look it up. I mean, and that's at Binbrook. Now, where's Binbrook?
Binbrook is between Lincoln and Grimsby.
So Lincolnshire.
Lincolnshire, yeah.
And you got there in April. So just a month before, two or three weeks before the end of the war.
Yes, the first flight we had there.
Now, hang on. Now, what happened when you got there? What was your reception like? Because you joined an active service squadron there. What happened when you first arrived at Binbrook as a crew? How were you sort of taken in?
We went there as a crew. We had photographs taken. That, like that one I showed you, was the intake of wireless operators, I think. Then we had photographs of whole crews, you know.
And
those that arrived that April.
And did they speak to you? What did they say about, how did they sort of, you know, brief you as to what your role would be and bed you into the unit?
I don't really know. I can't remember.
Fair enough. No, don't worry.
We had a lot more freedom than we had elsewhere. That's what I remember. And the first few nights we were there, we slept in a barrack block.
What was that like?
Big, brick barrack block. It was very modern to us. The other accommodation we've had been Nissen huts and all this sort of thing, but these were proper barrack blocks. And they had all the massive hangars, what came to be known as the Binbrook hangar. There was something special about it. And we all messed together in a big dining room. And from what I recall, this happened just for, I don't think it even lasted a week. By this time, Haman had his commission.
Now, what impact did that have on the rest of you? Well, referred to it briefly, but let's look, because you were all sergeants.
Himself, yeah. He isolated himself from us. He needn't have done. We could have all messed together, you know, as an aircrew mess, but used the officer's mess. And I don't actually know where his billet was, where his bed was, or what sort of accommodation he had in. We used to meet him for briefings.
So you had no social relationship with him anymore?
Very little.
Did that affect crew morale or your morale at all? Not, you know.
Well, in one or two ways it did.
How?
Well, there were one or two incidents. It started at Desborough, but yeah, it's a long story. We couldn't pay a lot of attention or put a lot of credence in what he said. He was an Australian, he seemed to boast a lot, but he didn't seem to have the intelligence to do what he said he'd done. It turned out he's in civilian life he was a metallurgist. Whatever that means, I don't know. Then he'd been in the Australian forces in the desert. Then he swapped that and became a pilot. Our bomb aimer was a little bit apprehensive about him. The bomb aimer, Vernon Rees, who I got on very well with, and with the other Welsh lads. Vernon Rees, the bomb aimer, used to say to Bill Turnbull, the flight engineer, "Bill, keep your eyes on him, for God's sake." Because Vernon Rees thought sometimes he was a bit on the worse for wear with drink. He did used to drink a lot. Beer, yeah, I'm not talking about getting high on spirits. He was a great beer drinker. We were all beer drinkers, we never drank all that much. And never if we were on flying. But he was a good pilot, you know, and I can remember coming back off a long night.
I don't want to go on too much into the actual right. Yeah. So, first few days you're in the barrack accommodation. Now, when do they give you your first flight?
First flight at Binbrook. Binbrook. April the 21st.
And what are you doing? Is this again?
Just a minute. April the 21st. He was still a flight sergeant then. Flight Sergeant Haman.
He gets commissioned while you're there.
The pilots fill these in, you see. Yes, he wasn't commissioned then. He got his commission later on. Yeah, that's right.
So what were you doing in the first few flights? I mean, were they operational or what?
Well, he's got this one down. Pilot Flight Sergeant Haman. And the duty was for the wireless operator. This was for my benefit. To follow this course. Oh, no. No, that's wrong. I don't know why this is put down, actually. Oh, yes, I'll tell you what it might be. That fish ponds I was telling you about, fighter affiliation. Me using the fish pond, giving the gunner's instructions. That was just a 50-minute flight. And this one, I had something to do as a wireless operator. It was across country, and it was for bombing and air firing. And it was duration of 5 hours 45 minutes. Yes, that's why that says flying up a Wallace operator. The next one was the same, did the same trip. Then we did fighter affiliation again, air to sea firing, and 0.5 guns. These were the cannons, 0.5 Browning cannon guns for 2 hours. That must have been the first time the gunners used the better guns. And I think we had to have the turret. There's a different turret had to be put on the aircraft to house these.
Now then, I think you get your first operational flight, which is...
Now, this is the first operational flight, yes, on the 30th of April.
Now, tell us about that, because it's an unusual operational yes. flight as well, isn't it? Because it's... Is it the Manor? The Operation Manor?
I've got an awful lot of information about that, which you can look at later.
Well, let's to tell us all you remember about that flight. If we use that as a typical thing. So tell me about the... When did you first know you were going on it?
Well, we went to briefing. It was our first operational briefing. And we were told about this supply drop to the Dutch. And it was to be at The Hague at a height of 500 feet. And we were told that there had been a truce with the Germans, that there would be no firing. We'd fly in at low levels. They knew where the dropping zones were. And we were to go in and drop without parachutes. We had the aircraft loaded up with stuff in canisters and bags, dropping at low level on this airfield somewhere beyond.
What were you carrying?
The Hague.
Did it? What were you carrying? Did you know what was in the bags?
Yes, a lot of dried potato. Bread. Oh God, I can't. Again, in the book I found about it in Rotterdam. Actually,
no. It's more what you remember. This, yeah.
Well, I can't remember much of what was in the bags because I never saw them loaded up. Probably at the time we did, but I've forgotten. But
no problem.
It's all recorded there.
So you loaded up then. What do you remember about the flight?
Well, we flew out over the North Sea, just topping the waves, more or less. It was quite exhilarating. We were heading for The Hague. We got there at low level. And as we were coming off, changed course to go across the sea wall, which was lined with quite a number of pillboxes, fortifications, gun emplacements. We saw German soldiers dashing out of these gun emplacements, putting their jackets on, putting their helmets on, and fleeing along to man the guns. And we were told, if you're fired on, you do not drop anything. You turn around, you come back. Well, as it happened, it says in the book, you know, a lot of stories about this operation. That, you know, they had this agreement we wouldn't be fired on. We were told, if you're fired on, you don't drop your foodstuffs, you turn around, you come back home. We were fired on, and it was tracer shells, what we called flaming onions, and I can remember seeing them coming slowly up in a line like that from these gun emplacements. The rear gunner gave him a burst from his machine guns, which he wasn't supposed to do, and they stopped. I don't know whether anybody else fired at them. So we went on and we dropped.
Now, what do you remember about the actual dropping of the supplies? I mean, you know, I'm not sure there is anything to remember.
It was exhilarating. It really was, because the rooftops, you know, flat roofs and balconies up near the rooftops were lined with people. They had British flags out, and well, how they got them up there and kept them secret, I don't know. They were waving and cheering and God knows what. And on a later trip, I don't know whether it was this one or not, but a later trip, we dropped our supplies, and one of the bags got held up and hung up on in the bomb bay. And the skipper was saying, "Reg, you know," to the pilot, fling the aircraft around a bit, you know, to get it off this hook." He didn't want to take it back, you know. And we did this, and by this time we were way past the dropping zone. We were going out, heading right along the coast. And there was a flat road alongside the sea wall. And all of a sudden, we saw hundreds of bicycles hailing along this this sea wall, because he'd got rid of the last sack, and then was seeing it drop, and we were heading that way. They were going to have it. And oh, we came back, we were full of it. We reported all this in briefing, of course.
Was there a proper debriefing?
Oh, yes, yes, proper debriefing.
And yeah. Did you tell them you'd been fired at?
Yeah, oh, yes, yes. Should all be there in the log. And I've got evidence, you know, in the books. I've got books from Dutch lines, as well, you know, this song. It's all in there.
Do you remember anything else about that first flight?
No, that was the great thing about that.
Did you do another one?
Yes.
Because that was the 30th, wasn't it?
That was the first one at The Hague. And I'll tell you later. The next one was on May the 1st. Flight Sergeant Heyman is still Flight Sergeant there. Oh, good heavens. Yeah.
And anything happened on that one you remember?
No, that was to Rotterdam. The thing I remember about that, again, it was a low level, 500 feet. No problem with being fired on at that time. But I can remember the devastation. We flew what appeared to be the same height of what we called Rotterdam Cathedral. And all around the cathedral was desolation, devastation. There wasn't one building that was on, you know, not destroyed. Right along there, and all we could see was this tower, massive tower, which we called the cathedral. Found out later it wasn't, but it was a very big church known as, I think, St. Luke's. I've got a postcard of it, because I've been back to Rotterdam and found it and got photographs of what I'm talking about now.
Anything else happened on the Rotterdam raid? Raid is the wrong word, really, but
yeah, yeah.
Operation.
Yeah. No. We did the third one, was to Rotterdam. Well, the fourth one was to Rotterdam as well.
So that's on the 2nd and 7th of May?
Yes, the 2nd, the 1st, the 2nd and the 7th. The first one was to The Hague. The second one was to Rotterdam, 1st of May. The third one was to Rotterdam on the 2nd of May. And then the last one we'd...
7th.
The 7th, that was the first one. This was the second one, third one. The fourth one was the last one we did.
Anything now, you remember about those other three?
Yes, just a minute. This date is wrong. I'm sure it's wrong. Because on that flight, which was the last one we did, it was the day the war ended. And I can remember distinctly flying at low level across the North Sea and hearing Churchill the early morning saying that the war in Europe was over. And when we got to Rotterdam that time, you couldn't believe the hijinks that was going on. People dancing in the streets, of course, with, you know, a lot more Lancasters flying around. And they're having a whale of a time.
And how did you react to VE Day? I mean, you'd been on operations, but not bombing.
Not serious ones.
How did you feel when you knew, you know, when VE Day came? That's the 8th of May.
Pleased it was all over.
So you'd had enough. That did for operations for you, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, yes. We didn't really think that at the time because, don't forget, the war in the East was still on.
So you thought you'd get involved in that?
Yes, and as I say, that was the 8th of May. Because we heard Churchill announcing the end of the war. We got back to Binbrook after that flight, and we were all going on leave. We had a fortnight's leave scheduled. We were all ready to go. And the skipper, Reg Heyman, this is when we really got to like him a bit more, I think, because we weren't going to fly ops with him, we didn't think. He said, you know, I would like to spend a few days with each of my crew, with their families, and get to know you and your families a bit more, you know. I thought, oh, yeah, great. That's fine, yeah. And he arranged to come home with me first. I was living at Liverpool then. So we got back off that flight and we were debriefed, put our kit away. We had all our luggage packed to go on leave. We got a Liberty wagon to, I don't know which station it was, but eventually got the train, arrived at Liverpool Lime Street. And it was evening, late evening. My father met us at Lime Street. And we then had to get a bus or a tram to where I lived on the outskirts near Speke Airport, Hallerton. And on the way, we passed the Adelphi Hotel. And my dad said, come on, you lads will be ready for a drink. And he took us into the Adelphi Hotel. And I'd been drinking. I'd never had a drink with my father before. It was the first time he bought me a drink. And I was really chuffed that he did, you know. And Reg Haven enjoyed it. So we went home. We were there 2 or 3 days, and he was going to go off down. The next place was to Wales to visit the Meet Up With Gunner and the bomb aimer, Taff Rees and Taff John. We got a telegram at my house. It was addressed to him as a skipper, being recalled to Binbrook because they were going to fly the aircraft out to the Far East. Don't know where we're going to land, Philippines somewhere. So we had to, the others had been informed, of course, so we all got back to Binbrook, all met up again, our leave was shortened.